Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Words of the Wise podcast, hosted by me, Lexi Maynard. Our mission is to capture the words and wisdom of the world's elderly so that their story and legacy may last forever. Like what we're about? Then be sure to subscribe to receive instant updates on new episodes. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Words of the Wise Podcast, or on Twitter at Words of W Podcast as well. Joining us today for episode 16 is the ever so sweet Mrs. Cleland. Known for her fudge and kind soul by the entire Delta Tennis community, I was so honored to share her story for episode 16. Here is Mrs. Cleland.
My name is Jeannie Cleland, and I was born July 6th, 1938. I'm 82 years old, and I was the daughter of Bill and Josephine Muir. And I was named Rhonda Jean, but no one ever calls me Rhonda. They always just call me Jeannie until a certain family member named me Moose. And that's going to be another story later.
Oh, my. Moose.
The night I was born, of course, we lived out in the country about 10 miles from town. And we never had a phone. We lived with my grandparents, but the neighbors had one. So my parents were both 20 years old when I was born. Mm-hmm. And my dad was very nervous. He couldn't even discuss to the doctor almost what was going on. But finally the doctor said, I'll find you. Just hang a red lantern on the mailbox, because it was 10 o'clock at night. So that's what he, and the doctor found them. And so when I was 6 weeks old, my mom went back to work, and she worked at the shirt factory in Seymour, Indiana. And my dad worked for a farmer down by close to Seymour, and he always told me this story, he walked 2 miles round trip for $1 a day plus lunch.
Oh, wow.
And in 1940, when my dad was working at Cummins, June of 1944, he was drafted into the U.S. Navy. So sometimes my mom traveled by train to be with him. If he was stationed either in Miami or San Diego or someplace like that, then I would be staying with my grandparents.
Okay.
And now, during the war, several items were rationed, and some of them were sugar, gas, shoes, and nylon stockings. And my mom had one book of ration stamps, and they had to last the whole month for those particular items.
Oh, wow.
And so these stamps were issued by a government office in Columbus at that time. Then in 1944, I was 6 years old, and I started first grade in Grammar, Indiana, in a two-room schoolhouse, rooms 1 through 4 and 5 through 8, grades 1 through 4 and 5 through 8. And so when my mom, when she was not traveling to join my dad, she worked and lived in Columbus. Oh. And lived with a friend who, the friend also had a husband that he was actually in the Air Force.
So you didn't actually live in Columbus at that time? Just your mother?
No, my mother lived with a friend that also had a three-year-old, and her husband's in the Air Force, so I went to visit my mother. My grandparents would take care of me through the week because I was going to school out in the country, but on Friday evenings, they would take me to my mom's.
Oh.
And then on Monday morning, my school teacher would pick me up and take me out to school. And she was a great teacher, and she was Evelyn Hubbard. I had her for a teacher, and Dave also had her for the first grade teacher.
Oh.
So then 2 years later in 1946, my dad got discharged and from the Navy, and he went back to work in the factory at Cummins.
Okay.
So then 1946 through 1950, my parents always rented houses, mm-hmm. apartments, whatever, when they weren't living with my grandparents. So probably me growing up, I lived in 5 or 6 or 7 different houses when I was little.
Oh, wow.
But my dad's dad, my grandpa, had always told my dad, don't go into debt for anything. If you can't pay cash, don't get it. So that was one reason that they were renting all those years.
Mm-hmm.
But their first home that they purchased was in Elizabethtown, but we just lived in Elizabethtown 2 years. And it was just three of us, and it was a big two-story with a wraparound porch, And it had 4 bedrooms, 2 baths, living room, dining room, kitchen, pantry, basement, and all of that.
Oh, my goodness.
For $7,000.
Oh, wow.
And they sold it after 2 years for $9,000. So okay. that was that. And I loved that place.
So you've kind of talked about it, but if you could describe just the regular, typical day of your childhood, like what would you say you would do?
Yeah, well, back then when I was in school, school started different than it has been for years and years, but it started September 1st, probably after Labor Day or around Labor Day, and ended the last of April. So we didn't go to school,
yeah,
you know, like they do now. And we lived in the country, and I was an only child. And although we lived probably 3 miles from where my school was, I never saw any of my classmates during the summer.
Really?
Not a one. No, we never got together. We never saw them in town. It's just the way it was.
Huh.
And so it was pretty lonesome for me, actually. I had a dog. But
yeah.
And the neighbors were a little elderly, but I'd go over and visit them now and then. And once in a while, they would take me to town with them, to the dime store or something for candy. And 9 times out of 10, just like it is today, I would forget my purse. I really didn't do it on purpose.
Yeah.
But they ended up buying my candy.
Aww. So what would you say is your favorite childhood memory?
My memories were going to the movies on Sunday with one of my friends. We'd probably be in the 7th or 8th grade about then. And that was in Columbus, go to the movie. And then there's an ice cream store still there called Zaharico's or the Greeks.
Oh.
And we would get to have hot fudge sundaes, and that was a real treat for us.
Oh.
And we would have our family reunions at Donner Park. And a long time ago, there was a lot of people there, you know. But as time went on, they kind of quit going, probably in the 1990s or something like that. But it was always fun to go and see my cousins and eat, and we'd go to the pool.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, my parents liked to get together with other relatives and make homemade ice cream in the summer.
Aww.
A lot of times. And my mom was always known for her famous lemon-flavored homemade ice cream.
So you two are both known for special dishes.
Well, maybe, but I always thought she was better than I was.
Oh, yeah. So did you have a job when you were growing up?
Yes, just one briefly. I probably was there maybe a year or less, but I worked for a little variety store, and they had a soda fountain, so I would be considered a soda jerk. But I was 15 then. It had to be less than $1 an hour, I know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you went to Columbus High School?
Yes, Columbus High School.
Okay. So what did the typical Saturday night look like when you were in high school?
Well, I started dating Dave when I was, I say 15, it was almost 16. It was in the spring and I was almost 16. And he was 17 going on 18, so I was a sophomore and he was a senior when I met him. So when he would come over to the house, he lived in Grammar and I just lived 3 or 4 miles from Grammar. And so he would come over and we would just play badminton in the backyard or croquet and watch my parents' black and white 12-inch TV. And go to the drive-in theater, either in Columbus. They used to have one outside of Columbus, or they had one in Seymour. So that was about what we did.
So you've lived in Columbus like your whole life, correct?
Yes, or outside of Columbus, but yeah. It's all considered Columbus.
Yeah. Yeah. How mm-hmm. How would you say that it compares now compared to then?
Oh, my goodness. There's probably no comparison. It's so big and populated now and modern looking and known for its great architecture. I mean, it's known all over the world for its architecture. Back then, they had 3 theaters in town, and now they don't have any. It's just so different. And when I was in high school, I'd walk downtown with my friends for lunch. You know, we could walk right down the alley. It was just a few blocks to the main street, and we would go out for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I know my dad, on Sunday night, he would give me $5, and that took care of my meals for the week.
For the week?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. You could go and get like a full course meal if you wanted it, and it wouldn't be a dollar.
Oh my gosh.
You know? Yeah.
We've been talking about your childhood and your upbringing, that sort of thing. What would you say is the greatest thing that your parents taught you?
Yeah, I thought about that and I could just come up with this one comment that my dad always told me, repeated it several times, but he always said, "Don't take a penny you don't deserve because it won't ever do you any good." And I had an example of that last summer. I was just coming out of Walmart with my cart and put my things away, took my cart to park it, and there was one with a lady's purse in the grocery cart. And it was in that top shelf, you know, of mm-hmm. the cart.
Yeah.
And it was open. It was a nice leather-looking purse, and her billfold was right on top. And it scared me to death. And I just grabbed that and took it inside and was shaking when I went in there. And so I talked to the first lady that was at the door and told her what had happened. And she says, "Well, I'll get the manager for you, the office manager for you." And I said, "Okay." So she came out and I explained about it. And she said, "Well, okay, thank you. I'll take it with me." And I said, "Well, what are you going to do with it?" And she says, "Well, we'll just put it in the office safe until somebody calls." And so I wanted to know what the lady's or what the person's name was.
Yeah.
And they said they couldn't tell me because they weren't allowed to look.
Oh.
But they told me that, I mean, they had a little smile on their face that, "But if you want to, we can't stop you." So I just got to the first little ID thing that I could see her name. And, you know, I just wanted to know because I thought, you know, I don't know if I could check later to make sure it was picked up or what, you know,
yeah.
But I don't know what my thinking was. But anyway, it was like 2 or 3 days after that. And our paper has orchids in there. Sometimes they have orchids and sometimes they have onions. People doing good things or bad things. And I had an orchid in the paper. So I felt really good about that.
Aww.
And it just said, "Thank you very much" to the person that turned in my purse on, you know, Wednesday at Walmart or something like that. So I knew it had to be me.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great story. Did you go to college?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Right out of high school. In fact, when I was in high school, I took a lot of typing and shorthand and transcription classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I always loved to type. I had an aunt one time. She'd married my uncle and they were both kind of young, but she had an old typewriter at home and she used to let me pound on it all the time. But anyway, when I was a senior taking one of these classes, the teacher asked one day in class how many people thought they would like to work for Cummins, and several of us wanted to. And so we went out and we took tests. So there were 4 of us all together that they took, and I was hired as a trainee. That was my last semester of school. And so I was still going to school, and I'd take a 7:30 class to 11:30. And then starting at 1 to 5, I went to work at Cummins, and I made a dollar an hour. I was a trainee in personnel. And then I rode home with Dave, my boyfriend at that time.
Yeah.
That made it convenient. And then when I graduated in 1956, and I went full time there, and I got a big raise when I went in. It was a dollar and a quarter now.
How long did you work there?
Well, I worked until Tim was born.
Okay.
Yeah, I had about 7 years in altogether at that time. I took 2 stabs at Cummins. Okay. So I was there for a while, and then later on I did.
Yeah, and didn't you end up becoming the executive secretary there?
That was our job title,
okay.
You know, like executive secretary. But I would have been working for managers or directors. I didn't work for the vice presidents or the presidents or anything like that.
Okay. What was your favorite part about that job?
Well, I usually worked for 5 or 6 people. And at that time, did all of their typing, their filing, and answering the phone, and making travel plans and all that stuff. It's good to be a secretary because the secretary's in on everything that's going on, you know, in the department.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it was a big corporation, but yet there were individual, so many individual departments that they were like a small family, and I like that. But I worked before going back the second time. I worked at a couple other places.
And where were those places?
I was a school secretary in the early 60s, and our first son was in the second grade, and he came home one time, and he says, "Mommy, the teacher asked us in the class if any of their mommies could type, and I told her mine could."
Aww.
So I went over and talked to the principal and got the job, and it was part-time, and it was close to home, and I just worked there a year or two at that time. Then the second place I went, I'd always thought working in a law office would be interesting. And my mom worked at the courthouse in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And she had heard about a job opening for one of the lawyers that his secretary was retiring. And so he was looking for someone else. So I went in and talked to him and ended up getting the job.
And were those the only three jobs that you ever had?
Yes, the soda jerk and the Cummins and at the school and legal secretary, and that's about it.
So we kind of skipped over this, but when you worked at Cummins, I hear that you had one of the highest scores in typewritten words per minute. Is that true with accuracy counting?
Well, I was pretty good. Well, that was the second time that I went back, and I had worked at the law office.
Mm-hmm.
I'd worked at two law offices. I worked at one in 1968 for about 3 years, and then I worked at another one for approximately 3 years. So this was after my second. I worked a total of 7 years in law offices, but this was the second one. And so I went to Cummins from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd heard on the radio going to work one day that Cummins was hiring, and so I went out to put my application in, and then they called me to take tests, mm-hmm. and I did, and they were pretty good. I forget what they were, but what I learned being a secretary is the reviews that I received periodically. They give you reviews, I don't know if it was once or twice a year, and so they would write what your strongest points were, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And mine, a lot of times, said that my strongest asset was in establishing strong relationships with all persons that I work for. And I always displayed team spirit, and I was dedicated, and I was loyal, and I had outstanding typing and shorthand skills. And I hate to say it, I mean, I don't like to talk about myself that well.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's good.
Yeah, that's a pretty good end report. Those are all great assets to have.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm a young woman. I'm a junior in college, so I'll be looking for a job here soon. What advice would you give to me as I go out and start to enter the workforce?
Well, I thought when I read that I would be at a loss for words to give you advice on a job now. Because and it's so different than when I was out trying to get a job, because I retired in 1987 at 49, and that was 33 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's just so different that I just wouldn't be any help to you, I don't think. But Cummins had a tour of their facility celebrating their 100 year in business, like last year, I think last summer. And we went on the tour of the new facility. They totally redid the headquarters right downtown. And they had built that headquarters in 1981. And I got to be one of the first that moved into that building.
Oh, wow.
And it was so beautiful. We loved it. And it had cubicles. Everybody had their cubicles, you know. But it was dark and didn't have much lighting and, I don't know, dark carpeting and everything. Well, now this one they put millions and millions, I mean, 50 million plus in on this headquarters building. And it's gorgeous and it's huge and it's really, really high tech. And it's so different to us. I mean, Dave and I just laugh. We would never get around in that. And we couldn't work anymore. There was no offices. It was all open. And there were lots of lockers for the people's, you know, they bring their backpacks in and put them in the locker.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably familiar with all this stuff.
Yeah.
And they have electrical outlets everywhere for all their computers and phones and laptops and tablets and all that. And they just seems like they can conduct their business by one of those types. And you're not even in a, I guess you work teams, but you never see each other. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does.
It's all open concept and it's paperless, you know.
Mm-hmm. But, all digital.
But I guess that's the way it is nowadays.
Yeah, different times, yeah. So transitioning, I know you kind of mentioned earlier about how you and your husband, Dave, met when you were 16 and he was 17, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how exactly did you meet? Like, do you remember your first time meeting him?
Yes, because we were two country kids and we met on the school bus.
Oh.
That's romantic, isn't it?
Oh, I love that, though.
Like I said, he was a senior and I was a sophomore. But his, I'll tell you, his way of flirting was crazy. he would grab my purse and he would take things out piece by piece and then he'd hand them back to me. And I thought, you're crazy. I might have something in there I don't want you to see. But so, in fact, we have a picture of us when our grade in our room in schools, when I said they went 1 through 4,
mm-hmm.
I was in the first grade and he was in the third grade and we're both in that same picture. So his mom made a 5x7 of that picture for all of our kids. So all of our boys have that picture.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little playhouse inside the room and I was standing in the window looking out in the first grade and he was over to the other side in a swing or something and his little brown eyes was just staring straight ahead. And so, but it's a nice picture.
Yeah, that's so cute. So do you remember what your first date was?
Yeah, I asked him for the first date.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
How did you ask him?
And I was nervous about it. And I belonged to like the Rainbow Girls and mm-hmm. they had an outing out west of town and a facility where it has a little lake and picnics and trails and stuff like that. So I had a couple girlfriends I ran around with. Well, they'd already asked their guys a long time in advance. I couldn't get up my nerve because I was afraid I'd get turned down. And so finally, and he and I's locker wasn't real far away.
Yeah.
So one morning I was running out of time and I finally got up the courage to ask him to go and he said yes. So I guess that'd be considered our first date, but I had to ask him. But he says now that I shoved him into my locker and wouldn't let him out till he said yes. I don't think that's true. But it sounds like something he'd say.
Yeah, that does. So how did you know he was the one?
Well, neither one of us dated very much anybody else because we got together early.
Mm-hmm.
But I really did. He was nice looking. He was very intelligent. He was quiet until you started talking about sports, and then he would talk all night and day. And he had and has a very dry sense of humor. He was an excellent softball player. He played a lot of ball. And his dry sense of humor, I had to get used to because sometimes I just didn't take it the right way, you know.
Yeah.
And I might shed a tear or two. And he said, I was just teasing. Well.
How did he ask you to marry him?
We were 19 and 21 by that time and been together a long time. And so I think we just he got the ring and came to my house. And it wasn't a big, wild engagement party.
Yeah. When did you get married? What's your anniversary?
We got married on December 7th, 1957. And we got married at the First Christian Church here in Columbus in the little chapel.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had two attendants stand up with us, my aunt and uncle. Then we had a little apartment that we rented in Columbus, and we went back for refreshments and visited with family members, and mm-hmm. that was about it. And then a little later, we went on a trip down to Florida.
Oh, for your honeymoon?
Yes.
Do you have any marriage advice?
Yes, I truly think that there has to be a lot of cooperation, a lot of patience, a lot of understanding and trust. And Dave's take on this is, he told this down at a, when he was MC at a breakfast down in Florida in our park. She doesn't trust me and I don't understand her.
That's all he said?
Yeah. She doesn't trust me and I don't understand her.
He said
it's all based on trust and understanding. And some of the people in the audience, they're like 150 people in the audience, they said, oh, isn't that sweet? And then he added on this second meaning.
Oh my gosh. That's funny.
So something worked because this December, before long, we'll be celebrating our 63rd.
Wow. 63 years.
So, but we celebrated our 60th anniversary like 3 years ago. And the family has always wanted, well, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? You know, we want to go on a trip. Or they wanted to do something big for us. Well, it was in December and, you know, we were flying back from Florida to Indiana to have our Christmas gathering. And I said, no, we don't really need like that. I said, I know the one thing that I do want, though, and they went through with it. I wanted to have a big photograph made, a big family photograph that we were all in, done by a photographer in Columbus. And that's what we did. We went in, I believe it was the day after Christmas last year, and sat for the portrait. And now it's a great big portrait, and it's all beautifully framed, and it hangs above the fireplace. And I love it.
Aww.
And everybody was in it except little Lucy. And she was supposed to be born before Christmas, but she didn't make it till December the 30th. So she's in her mommy's tummy in the picture. But she, so there was a total of 17 persons, and then little Lucy. And so on top of that, the kids got together, the four sons and the daughters-in-law, and Tim was the author of it. Are you surprised?
Not at all.
And it's a booklet put together. It's all black and white, and it's probably 25 pages long, and it's called 60 Years of Joy.
Aww.
And they got together, and I understand they had more fun, and they talked to each other more than they had for a while on the phone and texting, getting all these crazy stories together. And they put them in by decades. And then up at the top under that, they would put what happened in that decade and who joined the family and who passed away and what were the inventions that came in that decade. And it's just like, if you look at that book, it's just like a history story.
Like a yearbook of your life together. Kinda.
Yeah. And that's what we did. And it was perfect to that and the big picture. And that's all we needed.
That's so special. So you have your four boys. How old were you when you had your first son? And then how old were you when Tim was born? And then can you go through the names of all four of your sons?
Okay. Well, Jeff was born when I was not quite 20.
Oh, wow.
And Tim was the last one of four, and I was 25 when he was born.
So four boys in 5 years?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. God bless
and
you.
So when I was 25, I had four children, and they were 5, 4, because they were only 13 months apart. And then from after 4, there was 2, so they were 2 years apart. And then our third one was 2 when newborn Tim came along.
Wow. And what are your two middle sons' names?
Well, I'll tell you all of them. The first one is Jeff, and the second one was Dan. The third one is Mick, and the fourth one is Tim.
Okay. And do you have any funny parenting stories from when they were little?
Yes, I could tell you a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I went back to work when each child was 6 weeks old. So I was working at Cummins, and I think you had to go on leave after you were 4 months, either 4 months or 5 months along, because they evidently didn't want fat people around or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But anyway, we found a lady that... My mother knew a nurse at the hospital because my mother was working in the office at the hospital at the time. And she was taking her two children to a lady. And so we checked with her and she would take ours. So she took Jeff to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And then 13 months later, Dan came along. So same deal. I'd go back to work and blah, blah, blah. So, and then 2 years later, Mick. And so she was taking care of three little children, little babies, and for $15 a week.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, and she included lunch with that. And she was the best lady. They just loved her to pieces. And her name was Edna Duncan. But Jeff, our oldest, named her Sweetie Pie. And so they had an Edna Duncan Day in Columbus at the library several years back. And we went, and Jeff's family went. By that time, Jeff had a little girl and boy, but we just had such a good time. And in fact, she came back, time flies about that, but she was back to come back with her daughter for some reason. She was out in Colorado with one daughter, and she came back, and they were at the Holiday Inn out in Columbus, out west of town. And her daughter called to say they were there, and was there any way we could come and say hi? So the only two boys that were available was Jeff and Dan.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went out there, and she was in the lobby, and she came to tears. She said, "Oh, little Jeffy," because she just loved him as much as he loved her.
Aww.
And so they just had a good time. But anyway, when Tim was born, I left Cummins to stay home for a while before I started all these other jobs.
Yeah.
It was a hectic schedule because taking the three kitties, and you'd have the bath at night, and you have to prepare their bottles when they were baby and take extra plenty of diapers and clean clothes and all this stuff and load them in the car and drop them by, and then get Dave and I get to work in order to, like, we had to punch a time clock, you know, we had a time card that we had to put in a machine, and then if you were late, you were docked 15 minutes or something like that off your pay or something. It's kind of hectic to get done, but we did it.
Yeah. What's the story of your boys sliding a mouse underneath the bathroom door? Can you tell that story?
Somebody's filled you in. Oh, yes. We built three homes in our life, and one was when Dave and I were just married. We had a new house. Then we outgrew that, and we built a tri-level on the other side, and this is the southeast side of town, and we've got up on the northeast side. And so the upstairs bathroom was up there with all the three bedrooms, but you know how your doors have a little bit of room underneath them that you can slide something through?
Yeah.
Most time. Well, I was in there. I'm not just going to explain what I was doing in the bathroom, but all of a sudden I looked down, and here's this little... Actually was a shrew. It's something like a mouse. It looks like a mouse, but they're blind.
Oh my.
And they just crawl around the edges, and usually they're outdoors, but they must have found it, brought it in, and they slid it under that door. And they said I screamed so loud, I was scared to death, because I don't even like a little mouse now, little and something like that.
Yeah.
And they say that I bounced up onto the counter where the lavatory was, but I don't think I quite did that, but I feel like I could have, maybe.
Yeah. What about this story about who's your son's pro?
Well, that was at a tournament down at Jasper.
Okay.
And we were down there, and the Snyders had a son. They were pretty wealthy people, and they owned a piano company down there or something, but they were very, very well known, and so Tim was playing, and the mom of the other came over to me, and she says, "Your son is a pretty good tennis player. Who is his pro?" And I looked at her like, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, I don't know about a pro. I mean, he hits balls against our garage." And she didn't laugh in my face, but she didn't have much comment either. After that conversation, maybe that's why she didn't talk to me anymore, because Tim ended up beating him, her son.
And he was just practicing at the garage door. She was probably paying all that money for her son to have a bro.
I know.
Speaking of sports, you've spent like millions of hours, in quotes, that's Tim's quotes, at your kids' baseball and tennis games, and then your husband's softball games. What was your favorite part about watching your sons and your husband compete?
We had four players, four children that played Little League, and the youngest three played all the way through high school baseball. And Mick and Tim played tennis, and this was all at Hauser High School. I think Tim was a 10th grader and Mick was a 12th grader when they played tennis together. But and then Tim played, I believe, at sophomore, junior, and senior years.
What lesson did you stress the most to your kids when they were growing up?
Well, I had to think about that too, but I think one thing would probably be to pick your friends very carefully and, you know, just a typical be careful when you're out with the car type thing. But I can't think of a lot of things that maybe I stressed back then.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the most rewarding part about being a parent?
Well, it makes you very proud of your children when they all grow up to be honest and dependable and intelligent and appreciative and all that stuff. And now they have good jobs and they have families that know right from wrong, and they volunteer to help when needed. And I know they treat us with a lot of respect, and they help us in any way they can. And so that's the best part about being a parent, I think.
I know that you said that you didn't know what you wanted to say for this, and if you don't have an answer, that's okay. I can just cut this part out. But did you think of any advice you wish that you could go back and give yourself when you were young?
Well, I thought about that later, and finally I told Dave something that I came up with. It makes sense to me. Maybe space my children out a little more. because but we talked about this a little bit before, because they were born in 53, 59, 61, and 63. So I had two babies in diapers. It seemed like forever.
Yeah.
And they were real diapers, too, the kind that you had to wash and dry. They weren't throwaways.
Oh, my.
Back then, you washed them, and then you hung them out and back to dry on the line. And it wasn't through all of them before I at least got a dryer.
So, as I mentioned earlier, you spent a lot of your time at your husband's softball games. And didn't he compete statewide throughout the Midwest?
Yes, he organized independent softball and basketball teams. And okay. He was 15. And again, he managed teams for 50 years.
Oh, wow.
And he also coached Little League baseball. And after he retired, he did 2 years of Hauser High School baseball coach, because there wasn't anyone at school that signed up to do that. And so he filled in. And then he had back in the late 60s, 1968, his team was Indiana Slow Pitch State Championship. They won and they went on to play Little Caesars of Detroit, and they upset them in the Midwest Regional. So that was big topics, but he did a lot of, we spent a lot of time at softball games, mm-hmm. whether it was local or in Ohio or Louisville, Kentucky, or sometimes the kids went with us and sometimes they stayed with their grandparents. And out of all those years, it was just kind of like a family, you know, yeah. And we were all young and had young kids at the same time, so we had something in common.
Mm-hmm.
But all the time he was doing this, we were still, I mean, I was still working full time, but we made time to be gone for the weekend to softball.
Yeah, you guys were busy.
And so we have a lot of friends. In fact, last year, there's one of our friends he just quit playing softball a few years ago, and he's the age of Dave. So they spend their winters in Florida, and Dave kept track, and he knew when this guy's birthday was. So he gave them a call, and we had a show that was being on was going to be put on at our clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so we called, and they were available for that evening, that Saturday evening. So they had about an hour and a half drive. They're on up to our house, and we went out to dinner and went to the show together. So that's friends that when we met, our kids were just babies.
That's so neat. You really are like a family.
Yeah, so.
How many grandkids do you have? Do you have any great-grandkids as well?
Yes. We have four grandchildren. And we have Ben, and he lives with his wife Liz in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
He's 37 now, and his sister Molly is 34, and she lives with her husband Dustin Crabtree. And they built a house right next to Molly's mom and dad. It was an extra 4 acres over, and it used to be planted in corn, but they wanted to buy that acreage, and it was, so Jeff sold it to them, and they built them it kind of looks like a log cabin, but it's kind of big, in the middle of 4 acres.
Oh, wow.
And so that's, Jeff and Linda have their grandchildren close to them, because Molly and Dustin now have Sophie, that's 10, and Lucy, that's 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there's Dan's family is Jordan, and he's 34 also. The cousins were just born a month apart. And his wife is Shelly, and they live up in Indy. And now they have a little Be Our Great grandchild, and he's a year and a half, Emmett.
Aww.
And with the virus the way it is, we don't get to see any of our grandchildren or our greats, or well, especially our greats, very often. And Sophie had her 10th birthday yesterday, but we just went up and took a gift and stood very briefly and saw her, but we don't get together and have big parties and stay in their house for hours. You know, we just can't do that. And little Emmett, they send me pictures. They keep me supplied in pictures, but it's not like seeing the having the real thing.
Yeah, or holding him, or
But he's growing up. So, and this coming Christmas, I don't know what that will bring, because we've been together every year for ever and ever here on Christmas Eve. So.
Yeah.
But I don't see maybe it happening this year, but maybe we can work something out.
Yeah, hopefully.
And Sophie is 10, but she plays a lot of tennis.
Yeah, she goes to Tim's camps all the time.
Yeah, she comes to Tim's camp. I didn't know if you remembered her or not.
Yeah, I remember Sophie. She's always out there practicing, too, even when it's not her session.
Well,
I love it.
She's been taking lessons here in Columbus also.
Oh.
And Kendall is the coach of Columbus North, and he teaches out at Tipton Lakes. Indoors. And so she's had several lessons over the years. And she's also attended several of Tim's tennis camps.
Yeah.
And I think she's improving quite a bit, Molly said. So Tim says he's glad to get, hopefully he can get down here sometime around Christmas maybe and see how much she's improved.
Yeah. So what's your favorite part about being a grandma?
It's so exciting when you see each one of them born. My mom, back when Ben was born, and it's that way with most of them, that she said the morning that I had seen him, my eyes just sparkled. So they were I was so excited. And I was 45 when the first grandchild came. And
young grandma.
So anyway, it's good. We've taken them several. When they were little, we'd take them on overnights, and we'd go to zoos and many vacations. And then the good thing about grandparents, you know, if they're fussy or anything, you just take them back to mom and dad.
Yeah.
Don't have to worry about them.
Yeah. That's what my grandparents say, too. So we've talked about this a few times, that you've spent so much of your life at sporting events, but when did you finally take up your sport of golf?
Well, Dave and I retired from Cummins. He retired in 85 and I did in 87. So about in 1989 and 1990, those winters, we spent renting in Florida. So it's in Tideview Estates in Ellenton, and it's on the west coast. It's about an hour south of Tampa. We went down in the second winter we were there. We just fell in love with Tideview. Beautiful, and it was nice, and there were things to do, but mainly, I said, at some time, I don't know why I'm in Florida, because I'm not a water person at all, but I love to walk the beach and be where the waves come in and everything. But we basically just like the weather and golfing and meeting with friends and going out to eat and Saturday morning breakfast at the hall. And they have shuffleboard. They have everything that you can do if you want to, and crafts and all that. But anyway, we purchased down there in 1990, not ever believing when we went down there at the beginning of the winter that we were going to buy a house at all.
So
once we got down there, they had golfing leagues. Dave had golfed, I mean, over the years, he'd golfed some, but when you're young and raising your children, you don't have time to spend a day on the golf course.
Yeah.
So, and I never was interested that much in it, but anyway, we went down there and took some lessons for a year or two before I'd even try it out on the
course,
out with the women.
Yeah.
The women's league, probably back then there might have been 24, 25 women, and I joined their league, and I know the night before I was sick at my stomach. I was afraid to go. I felt so bad. I didn't use a whole set of clubs, for sure. I only used a 5 and a 7 iron and my putter. That's all I knew how to use back then. But I improved some over the years. Between 1999 and 2014, I won a couple club championships, and I won the first flight 4 different years.
Wow.
I had the best actual score 6 times. Yeah. I finally learned how to hit that little white ball thumb.
Yeah. Not only that, but you also had 2 hole-in-ones.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. You're a natural for starting
kind of
late.
Hole-in-ones are just luck. It's totally luck.
Can you tell the story of your first hole-in-one?
Yes, it was on vacation in Ohio, and Tim and a friend of his that he went to school with, Tom, it was the last day of our vacation, and it was kind of rainy and stuff, but we wanted to get a golf match in, and so we played. We came up to this par 3, and I could not make up my mind what club to use at all. It was like 105 yards or something like that.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know, and I grabbed a club, and I swung it, and I just didn't feel comfortable. And I went back, and I got another one out of my club, out of my bag, and I tried it, and I looked at Tim. He was standing there like, when are you going to hit?
Yeah.
And so I said, I just don't know. I don't feel right. I'm going to quote him. He says, he looked at me and he says, hit the damn ball. So I said, okay. And I stepped up and I whopped that thing and it went down there and it kept rolling and rolling and rolling and it rolled in the hole. And Tim jumped up and down and he said, oh, it went in the hole. And this friend that was with him, there was a little hall, a little hill like thing, and he fell down rolling in laughter. And so that was my first one.
Oh my gosh.
We've made lots of friends over the years while we've been in Tideview, and you know, they're from all over, I mean, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Indiana, and Iowa, and Illinois, and Florida, and Canada, and various more. Mm-hmm. So we've golfed with friends here in Indiana for several years too, but I didn't get to this year. But now there's just 4 or 5 or 6 in our group. It used to be we'd have 2 or 3 foursomes, you know, but it's dwindled some.
Yeah.
But there's one golfer in the group, and she's a real good golfer, and she's a real nice gal, and she's a grandmother of Tyler Duncan, and he's now playing on the PGA Tour.
Oh, wow.
Playing with the big guys. He's from Columbus, Indiana, so
yeah.
That's he's a celebrity.
That's so cool.
We've watched him on TV a lot.
Yeah.
And then one thing about the golfing in Florida, and she is just the sweetest person ever. Her name's Gwen. She's my favorite person, and she's from Ohio, and she loves to play golf. But then a couple years ago, she had to have a hip replacement or something, but went fine. And so she comes out to play, and she doesn't really hit all of the balls. She just picks and chooses, and she don't care what her score is. Just, she wants to be out socially, you know. And she's 97.
Oh, wow.
And she still is excitable. And if you look, she's a beautiful woman. And if you looked at her, you thought she wouldn't be a day over 75.
Really?
For sure. And she's 97.
That's amazing.
And on the other hobbies, yeah, I do. I like to paint the house, rooms inside, and paint some shutters outside or whatever. I like to do that. In fact, that's what I'm doing. Some this winter, I'm not going to have, you know, I can't get out and do a lot. I told Dave I was going to get me a stash of paint so I can get busy here one of these days.
Yeah.
When it's snowing outside.
Uh-huh, that'd be fun.
Okay, and then the tennis camp, that was a hobby.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to here soon. But first I was going to ask you about, when did you start making your famous peanut butter fudge?
Whenever Tim started coaching.
That's when you started making it?
I suppose that's been back in the late 90s.
Wow, and your snickerdoodles. And
the snickerdoodles, yeah.
So where did you get that recipe from?
Well, a long time ago, I got that peanut butter fudge recipe from an aunt of mine, Aunt Bertha.
Okay.
So that's where I got that. The snickerdoodles my mom used to make all the time, and I think she and I both just liked to make them because of their name, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then at Thanksgiving and Christmas, I make my mom's famous homemade noodles from scratch. I roll them out and let them dry and cut them and everything.
How long does that take you?
A long time.
Yeah, I bet.
Because you roll out one like you're going to make a pie, only I roll out about six, and then you have to let them dry for hours, make sure they're good and dry, and then cut them, and it takes time to cut, and I cut with a knife. I know there's probably things that would do it a lot quicker, but I just do it the old-fashioned way, the way my mother did, and they go over quite well.
That's what Tim kept saying, how good they are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he loves them.
Yeah. So back to the fudge, and since you would always bring those to all of the Delta Tennis things, you volunteered for the Tim Cleveland Tennis Camps, supported the Delta Tennis program for over 30 years. Yeah. What has been your favorite part about being so heavily involved with the Delta Tennis family?
Well, I just love it because attending the matches and watching all the boys and girls over the years, and they're so good. They're such good people, and they're so talented and well-behaved, and they'll say, "Hi, Mrs. Cleland." And then just meeting and visiting with the parents and the grandparents, and it seems like a family, you know?
Yeah, it really is.
And especially I'm always excited and see that the former players come back and support Delta Tennis so much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Especially like in the postseason, and they come back and I see kids that I haven't seen before. For instance, we went up just yesterday, you know, to the state finals in one dubs, and Zach Irvin was there. You remember him?
Yeah.
Or know him?
Yeah.
Yeah, Zach Irvin was there. And Paul McKinney. Have you heard that name?
I've heard the name. I don't know. I've never met him, but I've heard the name.
Well, he's been stationed, he said, in Washington, D.C. for a long time, and he was in the military and all this stuff. And I had not seen him for years. And he was standing there, and Mr. and Mrs. Jackson were there, and Mrs. Jackson said, "Well, Paul McKinney." But otherwise, I wouldn't have known who it was.
Oh.
Because it had been so long since we saw him.
Yeah.
But anyway, Drew DeHaven, I mean, there's just so many of them that just come back and come back and come back, so.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I get to see the Coach Cleland at work.
Yeah.
So passionate with his coaching.
Do you have any favorite memories from over the years with Delta Tennis?
Well, yes. One of my favorite memories is, do you remember Grandma Peggy Brown, or was that before your time?
She was before my time, but I know the Peggy Brown, Grandma Peggy Brown Award.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, she was a great person, and we saw her, knew her. She loved going out to eat after matches.
Mm-hmm.
And she had two grandsons that played, Jordan and Josh, and they were the apple of her eye. She was definitely one of Delta's biggest fans. She was there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And on Sundays, she had a little apartment, and she would make food for tennis players. And Tim told me there might be 8 or 10 people there. I don't know. She loved to cook. So anyway, she texted him one time, and he told this story at her funeral, because she passed away in October of 2008, and he was one of the speakers. And he said he got this text, and she just started, and he says he called her, and he said, "What's going on?" And she had made a mistake in the text, and it says, "Don't forget, Tim, Sunday we're dating." She meant to say, "Sunday we're eating." she got her word mixed up there. And so he told that story on her at her funeral. Anyway, so then the Spirit of Caring Award in 2009, they started that.
Yeah. No, I've heard all great things about her.
Yeah, we liked her a lot. And Actually, I believe she was buried in a, I'm just positive she was buried in a Delta t-shirt. That's what she wanted to be. And I know that was the way it was at the calling.
Mm-hmm. So as you look back on your life, who are the people who have influenced or impacted you the most?
Well, I know that the quick answer to that is my mother.
And why do you say that?
Well, her mom died when my mom was about 13 years old. And my mom was just barely starting her freshman year, I think, and had to quit because she had a dad to take care of and a brother. And she did the cleaning and the cooking and whatever needed to be done, she did. So that was the time that she was, and when her mom was ill and she had to go to Cincinnati for treatments for breast cancer. And my mom rode the train with her. An uncle would take them to the train station in North Vernon, Indiana. It's just not too far from here. Yeah. And they'd catch the train and they'd be gone all day. And then they'd come back and he'd pick them up and take them home. So a little 12-year-old was having to do that.
Oh, wow.
With going with her mom. So my mom and I were like sisters because we were only 20 years apart. And we just had fun together. We liked to shop together and just get dresses that matched and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just really close. And she worked full time, but we had all those little kiddies. Sometimes Friday night or a Saturday night, Dave and I wanted to get away for a few minutes, probably going to a Columbus High School basketball game because we covered that, or we followed them like crazy. But she never was too busy to babysit. I can't remember her ever turning us down.
Aww.
And she lived just, you know, less than a mile from us. And Dave's mom was the same way. My mother-in-law, I had a sweet mother-in-law. Some people say bad things about my mother-in-laws. But she babysat also. So anyway, my mom, she suffered from Alzheimer's.
Oh.
And started at 78 years old, and my dad cared for her at home for 4 years, but she had to end up going into the nursing home for 3 years. So she died in July of 2003.
Oh.
So it's a terrible thing to go through.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, your mm-hmm. loved one... She doesn't recognize you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway,
it's okay.
My dad passed away in February of 06. Mm-hmm. And we came back every year. And we came back every year after we purchased our place in 1990. And we didn't have a place to stay because our kids bought it. So we stayed here with them and just had fun mm-hmm. initially because they loved to go out to eat. And we did too. They loved to play cards, and we played all kinds of cards and just had a big old time.
Oh, so fun. Do you have like a favorite memory or time period of your life?
Yes, I thought about that, and I think the 1950s and the early 1960s, for reasons of that I'd graduated from high school. I had a job. I had a husband. I had a new home. And I was a mother to 4 boys, 2 of them in the late 50s and 2 in the early 60s. So I think that's my favorite time period.
Mm-hmm.
And what more could you ask for than that?
Yeah. Can you think of any particular event that really impacted your outlook on life?
I just thought of this last night. As I was commented before, I worked at Cummins while I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked in the personnel department, and I reported to the manager, and they sent me back in the corner with a little typewriter, and I had done some typing for him. I hadn't been there, you know, a couple days or so, and I'd typed some things. And he just announced with people around him, "This girl is good." And I thought, are you talking about me? But I really do think that even that early part, the first job I had like that, that somebody said like that good about me, that maybe I was good. And I think that was the beginning that I had more confidence in my work over many years. And so I think just that one statement made a difference.
And then I didn't send you this question, but I'm just curious. Tim always talks about, and obviously every time I've encountered you, I've witnessed this too. You're just so positive and have just, I feel like, a good outlook on what really matters and stuff. Like, how do you remain so optimistic?
When I read that question, I kind of laughed. And I said, well, Lexi, you're not with me all the time. I'll say, for the most part, I do try to just have a positive outlook and think that things, sometimes you think things happen for a bad reason or a good reason, but I just always think that things happen for the better a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And the deal that I know the family remembers this vividly, I pretended like I didn't remember, but we were having a big family night playing Scrabble years when the kids were teenagers or a little bit older, probably, maybe. And evidently, I didn't like how it was going. And I upset the Scrabble board. And these little letters scattered all over the kitchen floor. And some of them were under the refrigerator.
Yeah.
And I just got tired of putting up with all these men and boys and the male dog and everything else. Then I just had a temper tantrum, I think. I'm not that way all the time.
Yeah. Do you regret anything in your life?
Well, I put a great big none up there at the top. I said I've loved the way that my life turned out because I have a great family. The jobs that I had, I enjoyed over the years. I mean, I really did. And established many long-term friendships over the years.
Mm-hmm.
We have good health so far.
Yeah.
And we're able to still get out on the golf course once in a while. And maybe not golf quite as well as we used to, but we attempt it.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to my generation?
I thought that over too, and I wouldn't have a clue. but anyway, being 82 years old and not a tech savvy at all, and I know you probably won't go along with this, but I'll just say it, to stay off social media a little bit. Don't constantly have to be connected to your phone. Don't take your phone to the dinner table, and instead look for ways to help people in need. Because Dave and I used to go out to eat all the time, and since the virus came up, we haven't, but we would go, and it could be people our age, or it could be people younger, or it could be a brother and a sister, or whatever. You would see them, like, they come out to eat a meal, and they never visit. They're on their phone, they don't even look up, and their food comes, and they're still on their phone, and they stick the food to their mouth, and I thought, well, why did they even come out?
Yeah.
You know?
It's sad.
But I see that happening all the time, so.
What do you believe is the most important thing in life?
Well, Dave and I had four sons. We have four grandkids. We have three great-grandkids. And I think over the years, we've tried to set good examples for them to follow. And hopefully those good examples will follow them and they'll benefit from them throughout their life. But it sounds simple, but that's what we believe.
What do you hope to be remembered by?
Being a caring person, kind and friendly, willing to help out anytime, and hope that my family was proud of me.
Well, I can tell you, I think they are pretty proud of you.
I know they are. But I had a couple, three more things if you want to talk about, but Yeah. If you don't have time, that's okay.
No, I definitely do. Go ahead.
Well, when I got a computer in 2000, and the boys said, you've got to get a computer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had a little email machine, but yeah, it was a dial-up thing, you
mm-hmm.
know. So then I got a computer. And so in 2010 is when I learned to text.
Yeah.
Well, kind of, I said. Because one evening, Tim called me, and he's the one that tried to teach me a little bit. It was at Christmas time.
Yeah.
And he called and his dad and asked if I was okay. And Dave says, well, yeah. And he says, well, I don't know. I got a text that made no sense at all. And he was afraid that I had had a stroke or a heart attack or something.
Oh, no.
And that's what he told me anyway. And so I really guess that what my comment is the woman that typed perfectly while in the workforce must have gotten on the wrong row of keys. this spring, I was talking about Sophie, and she was supposed to write letters while she was still, you know, they were in class in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wrote me a letter. And it was, of course, during the virus thing, just starting then. But I got it in front of me, and I love the letter.
Aww.
She says, dear Mama, I miss seeing you. I wish we could see each other more, but we can't. She said, I've been making crafts and playing with my sister. What are you doing? You are the best, but I cannot see you. Love, Sophie. I thought it was so cute.
Integrous, optimistic, kind. These are the qualities Mrs. Cleland has exemplified throughout each stage of her life. Although she has lived what some would call a simple life in small-town Indiana, Mrs. Cleland asks the question, what more could you want? With her family at the center, paying close attention to details and focusing on what truly matters, it's clear that her boss at Cummins was right when he said, this girl is good.
On the agenda for a year, we went to the Balloon Festival in New Mexico.
Really?
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of colorful balloons up at the same time. It was just, it was gorgeous. We just enjoyed all of them. And then as far as tiny estates, when we moved down there in 1990, and this is another thing that Dave and I volunteered for several years, they had a social event that had happened every February, and we invited guests, everybody that had
Then you did so good.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time out of your day to share your story and answer my questions. And
well, thank you. And it's been a joy to talk to you. And I hope everything went okay.
Yeah, no, you did great.
That's it?
Yep.
Okay.
So thank you so much. Good job.
Well, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.